Welcome to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly.
Cybersecurity people somehow never seem to leave the field. A case in point is Suzanne Spaulding, Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Undersecretary of Homeland Security. I checked with her to get her assessment of the state of cyber threat information sharing within the government.
Well, we're much better than we used to be. The good news is that the federal government is being viewed very much as an enterprise. We've managed to break out in many ways from the stovepipes for each department and agency, completely handling cybersecurity on its own. And back when I was at the department, they had already started a major effort to provide greater visibility across the enterprise of the civilian government, federal departments and agencies of what was happening, and to be able to share threat information in a more rapid and meaningful way. And so it started with the Einstein program, which first gave visibility to the federal enterprise, the all of the networks that were on the federal system, and then gradually increasingly sophisticated means of identifying known suspicious behavior and blocking known suspicious behavior. And so that, again, and feeding that into a dashboard that provides some real visibility. Beyond that kind of perimeter defense, DHS was also able to deploy a suite of tools. Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation is the name of the program that was able to make tools available to the departments and agencies across that civilian government. And again, to look inside at their networks, do asset identification, which is a critical first step and proved to be very illuminating, but also vulnerability assessments and alerts, and be able to combine that with threat intelligence information for better prioritization and mitigation. We've also instituted, and when I say we, I mean the Department of Homeland Security. It takes a while to get that mission sense of mission out of you, but I've been gone for 2 years now. Automated information sharing allows for real-time sharing of threat intelligence across the civilian federal government, as well as with the private sector in both directions. And then finally, on a more systemic level, increasingly using the large amounts of threat data and network data that we can gather across the civilian federal government, along with artificial intelligence, to begin to recognize behavioral attributes of malicious activity that we have not seen before. So those are some of the ways in which threat intelligence is being used now to better protect federal departments and agencies.
We're speaking with Suzanne Spaulding, Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Undersecretary for the National Protection and Programs Directorate at the Department of Homeland Security. Your old directorate has a new name, we should point out now, since that's fairly recent. But what about the information sharing between the sectors of the economy and Homeland Security and those sectors that don't share with Homeland Security, but share with another assigned federal department that's aligned with what they do in the private sector, like energy? That was slow to take off. What's your assessment of how that's been lately?
You know, I think there is a good amount of sharing with the federal government, primarily, though, through information sharing and analysis centers, more so than a one-on-one. When the department first set up the automated information sharing, I think what Congress and the department envisioned was that a lot of companies would sign up to receive these automated threat indicators and to share automated threat indicators. And certainly when I left, and I don't think that it's gotten a whole lot better, there were not a lot of individual companies who saw real value to them in signing up for this. But increasingly these companies are willing to share with each other through information sharing and analysis organizations, whether they're sector centers or organized around different, you know, perhaps geography or other kinds of similarities. And so what I have seen is an increased understanding of the value of sharing threat intelligence information but that it's primarily being done in these private sector organized ways. And then those centers can share that anonymized data with the federal government. And so the automated information sharing effort really benefited from aggregators, if you will, who would pull together data. I think aside from the automated threat indicator information, my sense is that the relationship between the federal government, particularly DHS, and I think also DOE and Treasury, some of the key departments and agencies that are sector-specific agencies, and their sectors, continues to improve. That the sector coordinating councils do an effective job of presenting to the federal government the priorities and needs, particularly information needs of the sectors, and provide an opportunity for those kinds of discussions, how we're going to meet those needs to take place. I co-chaired meetings several times a year with 30 or 40 CEOs from the electricity sector, for example, which I co-chaired on the government side with the Deputy Secretary of Energy. And on the private sector side was chaired by Tom Fanning of Southern Company and brought, as they say, lots of CEOs and important associations to the table. And I think those kinds of conversations have really helped move the ball.
And you mentioned also the automation of threat information sharing. A lot of companies, a lot of agencies are also driving toward automation of the remediation of the threat so that human being, there's not enough people in the world, they say, to watch and respond to every possible threat. The velocity is maybe thousands of times a day for a given organization. With everything automated, how does one extract the information from the automation that would lead to knowledge of what the trends are and where an organization needs to go next if everything is happening in kind of black box fashion?
Well, everything being automated doesn't mean that it isn't visible. And so there are wonderful technologies and platforms out there that provide very effective visualization of what's happening on your network. And that's important. So you can automate responses or actions taken with regard to the detection of known malicious activity that you have a high level of confidence in. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to have visibility into it. You can still get alerts and an understanding of the context in which that action was taken. And I think it is important to have some level of automated response there. And indeed, that's part of what was being built into the Einstein 3A across the federal government. And so similarly, I think there are, I know there are platforms for doing that in the private sector.
Suzanne Spaulding is Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Undersecretary of Homeland Security. In part two of the interview, Spaulding discusses the future of threat information sharing and ways of making it more effective. I'm Tom Temin.
Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly Threat Platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
Cyber threat information sharing has become a routine activity in many a security operations center, but sharing itself is only a means to a goal. In part two of my interview, Suzanne Spaulding, Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and former Undersecretary of Homeland Security, describes the future of information sharing.
I think we are increasingly realizing that information sharing needs to be not necessarily just the objective, but a means to an end. In other words, what we're really seeking is obviously more effective ways of defending our networks, detecting activity and responding, and we're looking for ways in which the federal government and the private sector can collaborate more effectively on that. Information sharing is a necessary component of that. And so I think that helps to build the business case. The more we focus on what are the ways in which we can help each other And then what is the kind of information that we need to share in order to effectuate that stronger capability? And I think that will help. I do think that there will continue to be a trend toward pooling, if you will, sharing threat intelligence information. I think it will increasingly be used in combination with artificial intelligence to do non-signature-based detection of malicious activity that, you know, help us understand the attributes of malicious activity and provide greater context. And so I think that our information sharing will increase as we are able to better articulate the business case for that. But I think we have to move, I think it's really important that we move beyond just threat intelligence and sharing information about vulnerabilities to sharing information about consequences and impact, because that is a critically important part of risk management. You know that it is a factor of threat and vulnerability, but also then the impact of that. If the threat is able to exploit a vulnerability, what is the impact? And understanding that impact, understanding the consequences, not just to your network, but to your business, or if you're a government department or agency, to your critical missions, is really what it's all about. And I think we have not spent near enough time in the cybersecurity arena focusing on consequences. We spend a lot of time talking about threat and vulnerability. And so I think there is a growing awareness around resilience, recognition that with all of the advances that we have made in understanding threats and combating vulnerabilities, that we have to assume in our cybersecurity planning that there will be a breach or malicious activity that will affect confidentiality, integrity, or access to data, including industrial control systems, and we should plan accordingly. How will we detect that quickly and mitigate the consequences? Sharing information around consequences is important to be able to do that effective risk management. And we see that, I think, in the growing demand for cyber security insurance.
Suzanne Spaulding is Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Undersecretary of Homeland Security. I'm Tom Temin.
Know your adversaries with Anomaly. Anomaly arms your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence, giving you visibility into hidden attacks targeting your network. Organizations rely on the Anomaly threat platform to detect cyber threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Knowledge is power. Stay up to date on the latest emerging threats with the Anomaly Weekly Threat Briefing. Subscribe free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
We're speaking with Suzanne Spaulding, Senior Advisor for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And getting back to the point you made a moment ago about the SCADA systems or industrial control systems, which of course implies that physical damage to facilities can occur because of a cyber breach. And recently, the Transportation Security Administration, one of your former sister agencies at DHS, came out with a policy that pretty much established TSA as responsible for both physical and cyber protection in the transportation sector. And so to what extent do you think that integration is going to spread where physical security and cybersecurity become one complex?
I think it's inevitable. I think it is the only way to successfully protect our nation's critical infrastructure. And that's why I was so pleased that Congress went forward with the establishment of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, which is the renaming and ultimately kind of restructuring of the organization that I led at DHS. And it was something that I fought very hard for, to make sure that those who wanted to pull cyber out and set it up as its own agency on the side, were not successful in that, because the integration of the what happens on our IT networks and what happens in the physical world has been growing and growing, and particularly with the Internet of Things and the industrial Internet of Things, we are increasingly aware that these are inexorably intertwined, and physical security depends on good cybersecurity, and good cybersecurity depends on physical security, and again, One of the most important things we can do for cybersecurity is to understand really its impact on our business or our mission if we're in the government. And that requires an understanding of your business that comes from your continuity of operations, continuity of business, your COOP planning. And those are often your physical security experts. They have to be in the room.
And in many ways, then, this moves that whole risk management approach and cybersecurity up the food chain corporately to higher and higher levels, so that you have department heads, CEOs really have to worry about this in a very direct way.
That's exactly right. And I talk with CEOs and boards of directors all the time about this and the important role that not only that they have to play, but that they really can play. It's easy to be intimidated if you're not a technical person by cybersecurity. And yet, when you think of this as a risk management, enterprise risk management effort, and the importance of bringing an understanding of how your business could be disrupted, what that means to your business, not what it means to your IT network, then you can quickly realize the value that CEOs and boards can bring and must bring to that risk management decision making.
And I wanted to ask you about the Cyber Threat Intelligence Integration Center, the CTIC. What's your assessment of that and its potential?
You know, I think it has great potential. One of the things that I was most excited about when CTIC was being created was the prospect for that organization to not just bring together cyber threat indicators, for example, from across the intelligence community, or even cyber threat technical information, but really to give us a broader look at the nature of the threat in cyber. And that is to bring in the regional experts, not the technical experts, but the experts in Russia, the experts in China, Korea, Iran, and talk with them, be able to ask them, what are the information gaps, for example, that these countries might use cyber espionage to fill. So that helps us to know where we should be looking rather than only looking where we see activity. How do these countries view cyber? Now, understanding that Russia, for example, views cyber as a subset of a broader information warfare rubric, and the ways in which China views cybersecurity as a way of controlling information flows to their own people and growing their economy, the two things they believe they need for regime preservation. So having those regional experts brought into the more fully into the cyber discussion is one of the things I think CTIC can be most valuable in accomplishing.
Suzanne Spaulding is Senior Director for Homeland Security at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and former Undersecretary of Homeland Security. There's much more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for February, sponsored by Anomaly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Anomaly are the experts in threat detection and intelligence. Organizations rely on the Anomaly Threat Platform to detect threats, understand adversaries, and respond effectively. Let the experts at Anomaly arm your security team with highly optimized threat intelligence and show you the hidden threats targeting your environment. Get started with expert insights from Anomaly. Subscribe to the weekly threat briefing and stay updated on the latest threats. Register free at anomaly.com/WTOP. That's Anomaly with an I. Know your adversaries. Be cybersecurity enlightened.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat, and the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, River.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Of course. Who's asking?
I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Sharing has never meant as much as it does now. We share the things we love most in life for the world to see. But what if we could actually do more with our sharing than just collect likes? What if this sharing could be used to make a difference? Now there's a place where we can put all that sharing to good use. The National MS Society is asking people to make a difference and share what they love with someone else who loves it too. Whether it's surfing, dancing, or whatever is important to you, we've created a place that'll help you get your experience out to the world. If you have a story, share it. If you have a solution, share that too. Join us at wearestrongerthanms.org, because together, we are stronger.
Vicky, how you doing? How's the knee?
It's coming along, doctor, but still some soreness.
Well, let's see. You know, this soon after surgery, some pain is pretty normal.
I was hoping to get more painkillers. The first round worked great.
We're being very careful with those now. Prescription painkillers are opioids, same as heroin. It's easy to start taking them, not so easy to stop.
Last year in America, an average of 40 people died from opioid abuse every day. Long-term addiction has become America's newest health epidemic.
So no pills?
Vicky, you're doing great. So let's try these anti-inflammatories, plus your physical therapy. If the soreness doesn't continue to get better, give me a call.
For opioids, the smaller the dose prescribed and taken, the better. Because even a few prescription painkillers can sometimes go a long, wrong way. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the Orthopedic Trauma Association. Visit orthoinfo.org/prescription safety.